Hello and welcome to this Boehringer Ingelheim sponsored promotional podcast entitled Start the Conversation Early. Actively support your patients with type 2 diabetes during Ramadan. My name is Dr. Sarah Jarvis and I'm a GP and clinical director of patient.info. I'm delighted to be joined by Professor Waseem Hanif, Professor of Diabetes and Endocrinology, Consultant Physician and Head of Services in Diabetes at Birmingham. This promotional podcast is an abbreviated version of the webinar broadcast on the 16th of February 2022. To view the full video version with slides, please click on the button underneath the podcast player. Prescribing information for Tradjenta, linagliptin and adverse event reporting information can be found on the website hosting this podcast. As a reminder, Tradjenta is indicated for adults with type 2 diabetes mellitus as an adjunct to diet and exercise to improve glycemic control, as monotherapy when metformin is inappropriate due to intolerance or contraindication due to renal impairment, or in combination with other medicinal products for the treatment of diabetes, including insulin, when these do not provide adequate glycemic control. So, let's think then about the cultural and religious aspects of fasting during Ramadan. So this year, Ramadan will run from on or around Saturday the 2nd of April to Sunday the 1st of May. Next year, it's a little earlier, as it is every year, on or around Wednesday the 22nd of March to Thursday the 20th of April. Now, there is good evidence that for adults living with type 2 diabetes, of whom there are many among our Muslim populations, providing Ramadan-focused education in good time, 6 to 8 weeks at least before Ramadan, is recognised to be a fundamental way of improving the safety of fasting. And that is why we are going to be looking today at the potential risks for adults with type 2 diabetes who do wish to fast during Ramadan, how to conduct pre-Ramadan medication reviews in a timely manner, and of course, how to back those reviews up with practical advice for patients who do wish to fast during Ramadan. Fasting during Ramadan forms one of the five pillars of Islam. It is considered of crucial importance. Now, the timing of the fast, which lasts from between 29 and 30 days, is based on the lunar calendar, which is why it varies from year to year. It's about 10 or 11 days earlier each year. Obviously, fasting is longer during the summer in the Northern Hemisphere, which is what we're concentrating on today. Now, in theory, all healthy Muslims who have reached puberty should be fasting as per custom. However, and this is really important, women who are pregnant or lactating, people who are travelling, people who have any acute or chronic medical health condition where fasting may place them at risk of ill health are exempt. But I know only too well from my experience with my Muslim patients that they feel an imperative to fast, that they feel it is something they must do, and they worry about whether or not they can consider an ongoing medical condition such as type 2 diabetes as one which makes them exempt. Importantly, of course, as we're aware, particularly for instance with sulfonylureas, fasting significantly increases the risk of hypoglycemia. And fasting here includes not only refraining from eating and drinking, but also from taking oral medications between dawn and sunset. So the issue is that while there are exemptions, many Muslim patients, they choose to fast not because they feel they have to do it, but because they wish to do it. Spiritual as well as social and cultural reasons. And of course, there's also the fact that with so many people from the Muslim community having type 2 diabetes, some of them may not recognize it as a health condition and certainly not as a health condition which makes them exempt. Interestingly, In a survey of over 12,000 people, 4 in 5 people with type 2 diabetes chose to fast during Ramadan. There is a personal choice, there is religious practice, and there is medical opinion. But the issue is, of course, that in order to have the medical opinion, either the patient needs to bring it up with their healthcare practitioner, or that healthcare practitioner needs to bring it up with the patient. And that is why we go back to that comment, that providing advice 6 to 8 weeks before Ramadan is a cornerstone to reducing the risk of hypoglycemia during Ramadan. So we know that fasting is potentially associated with acute complications in adults who have type 2 diabetes. And of course, I think it goes without saying, the one we all think of in type 2 diabetes is hypoglycemia. But interestingly, of course, dehydration can be a real issue. And we know particularly that for patients with renal impairment, this can be a significant problem. In the last couple of years, courtesy of the COVID pandemic, we've thought much more about intercurrent illness, about acute illness that might put the patient at risk of volume depletion. Hyperglycemia, if the patient is not taking their medications, and very limited evidence for diabetic ketoacidosis, which of course does happen with people with type 2 diabetes, but is much, much less common than it is for those with type 1. So, is there evidence that severe hypoglycemia is more common during Ramadan among people who fast? Oh yes, absolutely, very clear evidence. And severe hyperglycemia or ketoacidosis was increased in another study in Muslims with type 2 diabetes who fasted for more than 15 days. And let's not forget that Ramadan lasts from sunrise to sunset for 29 to 30 days. But if we then think about the combination, those key risks for people with diabetes who fast during Ramadan, hypoglycemia, hyperglycemia, diabetic ketoacidosis, dehydration, and another complication that these patients are more at risk of, especially if they become dehydrated, thrombosis. Of course, in addition, particularly for older and frail patients, volume depletion, dehydration, can lead to postural hypertension or general hypotension with the subsequent risk of falls or other injuries. And even the eyes are not exempt. Retinal vein occlusion has been suggested to increase during Ramadan among those who fast as a result of volume depletion, dehydration. Osmotic diuresis, resulting in hyperglycemia in addition to not taking medications. And this is not a factor for a small number of people. The CREED study reported that nearly 2 in 3 adults with type 2 diabetes fasted every day during Ramadan. And let's go back to that figure of fasting more than 15 days, increasing the risk of severe hyperglycemia or ketoacidosis. So in summary, this is an issue of absolutely fundamental importance to so many of our Muslim patients. The 29 to 30 day fast of Ramadan is one of the 5 pillars of Islam. And if you are a healthy Muslim, and let's not forget that many people with type 2 diabetes who are Muslim do not consider this to be a health condition. Any healthy Muslim who's reached puberty is required to take part as per custom. Again, even though if patients, particularly with type 2 diabetes, are at higher risk of hypoglycemia, dehydration, or hyperglycemia, ketoacidosis, clotting, if they are at higher risk, they are exempt from fasting, but 4 in 5 people with diabetes choose to fast during Ramadan. And in many cases, it may be because they do not know that they are exempt, or they feel uncomfortable with the idea of using what they might perhaps see as an excuse. There are spiritual as well as cultural implications here. But we do know that fasting during Ramadan is potentially associated with acute complications for patients with type 2 diabetes. So it is absolutely key to provide them with patient education and to do so in good time, 6 to 8 weeks prior to Ramadan, can offer greater benefit. And now, without further ado, over to the perhaps ultimate expert, Professor Wasim Hanif.
Thank you very much, Sarah, for handing it over to me. Hello, everyone. My name is Wasim Hanif. I'm a professor of diabetes endocrinology at University Hospital Birmingham. Today, we'll be talking about managing and risk assessment, screening and advice for people with type 2 diabetes who are intending to fast during Ramadan, which is going to start in April 2022. Now, the first area I'm going to cover today is using risk calculators to assess the risk of people with type 2 diabetes who are intending to fast during Ramadan. In the last year or so, there have been several publications looking at various type of risk calculators that can be used in terms of assessing the risk of people with type 2 diabetes intending to fast during Ramadan. I was the main author of one of them and has been involved with the other. So this is the South Asian Health Foundation Risk Calculator and the International Diabetes Federation and Diabetes and Ramadan Allowance Risk Calculator. There has been another risk calculator that has been developed by the American Diabetes Association and EASD collaboration. So I'll be trying to cover all the three and try and see what the differences between them are. So the first one here is the IDF calculator. This is pretty comprehensive and in a way the most complicated of all the risk calculators that we have got. It tends to look at 14 elements, starting from the type of diabetes to comorbidities, to the duration of fast, to the social and employment roles of patients, along with things like frailty, cognitive impairment, and acute complications. For each of the sections, there are scores that can be given, and the scores can vary between anything between 0 to 6.5. At once the scoring has been filled in, it looks into three categories. So one is the low risk category, which is 0 to 3. Then is the moderate risk category, which has been 3.5 to 6, and the high risk category, which is 6. So in certain conditions, like if you've got a renal impairment with an eGFR of less than 30, that itself has got a risk of 6.5. So that will take the person into the high risk category. So it is about looking at these individual risks, getting the scores together, and then classifying the patients into the low, moderate, and high risk categories. The South Asian Health Foundation guidelines or risk calculator, which was published in 2020, is a bit more comprehensive and in a way is most suitable for UK patient population, considering the duration of the fast, considering the kind of services we have for people with diabetes in the NHS. This is a much more simple risk calculator that has got three sections to it, the high risk, the moderate risk, and the low risk. So the high risk category are people with type 1 diabetes or type 2 diabetes with poor glycemic control of HbA1c greater than 8.5%, hypoglycemia unawareness, severe recurrent hypoglycemia 3 months before Ramadan, and so on and so forth. Moderate risk categories are usually people with type 2 diabetes with moderate glycemic control, HbA1c of 7.5 to 8.5, people with moderately type 2 on oral glucose-lowering agents like DPP-4, SGLT2 inhibitors, glucagon, people with well-controlled type 2 diabetes on basal insulin. And then you have got the low-risk category, which is people with well-controlled type 2 diabetes less than 7.5 on diet alone, or people with well-controlled type 2 diabetes on monotherapy and otherwise healthy. Now, this risk calculator actually is slightly more stringent in terms of the advice. So, for example, for people with type 1 diabetes, it puts them into high-risk category, while the IDF calculator gives them a little bit more latitude. Again, with the South Asian Health Foundation risk calculator, the general guidance is that if you're in the high risk category, you cannot fast, in moderate, should not fast, and in the lower risk categories, can fast with appropriate guidance. The ADASD guideline, again, recommends that the very high risk fasting is not recommended. And in the high risk, it says may choose not to fast, and the moderate risk may choose to fast with caution, and low risk may choose to fast. So it's got four categories, like the very high risk, moderate risk, and low risk. In principles, you've got three risk calculators, and you can choose to use which one is most suitable or apt for your patients. So in summary, the important things to remember with the risk calculators is you need an individualized strategy are key. Ramadan-focused medical education is required for all patients. A pre-Ramadan assessment, including a robust assessment of hypoglycemia awareness, following a healthy diet and physical activity, frequent self-monitoring of blood glucose and continuous blood glucose monitoring, and modification of treatment regimes. Again, with high risk, moderate risk, and low risk, high risk have got a very high risk of developing complications, and the general recommendation is that these patients must not fast. If they still insist on fasting, utmost care and monitoring should be provided alongside strategies and recommendations. In the moderate risk category, the recommendation is they should not fast. If they still insist on fasting, need to be aware of techniques and strategies to decrease the risk. While in the low risk categories, they can fast if they choose to, but you need to discuss techniques and strategies to minimize the risk. So how are we going to develop individualized strategies and advice for patients with type 2 diabetes who choose to fast during Ramadan? Now, most of these guidelines are actually based on expert opinion, as there is very little research or RCT control trials to guide us. So one of the important things is to try and arrange what we call a pre-Ramadan counseling, which can be done between 2 to 3 months before the onset of Ramadan, which is about the right time now. All individuals seeking to fast should attend a pre-Ramadan counseling, and this can happen either virtually or in real during the current pandemic, 6 to 8 weeks before Ramadan. All patients who are intending to fast should have a structured education looking at risk quantification, the role of self-monitoring of blood glucose levels, clear guidance when to break fast, when to exercise, fluid and meal planning, and medication adjustment during fasting. And to stratify the risk further, it is important to take a detailed medical history, aspects of diabetes along self-management, looking at the comorbidities. Prior experience of previous Ramadans is extremely important and should be taken into consideration. Individual's ability to self-manage and other aspects of the risk of fasting. Now, one of the myths which is quite common in the UK Muslim population, especially from the subcontinent, is that that self-monitoring of blood glucose, any blood test, actually invalidates the fast. Both from the religious point of view, it is very clear that doing finger prick to monitor blood glucose does not invalidate the fast, and this is there in well-published literature, and if need be, should be referred to the relevant papers, and in some cases to the local imams to help educate the patients. When to test is actually very important. All patients don't have to do self-monitoring glucose, but especially ones who are on insulin or on sulfonylureas are encouraged to test more often. So one is pre-dawn, before the suhoor meal, in the morning, midday, mid-afternoon, pre-sunset, which is just before iftar, and 2 hours after iftar, and at any time when the patient has symptoms of hypoglycemia and hyperglycemia. The other important part of the education is to educate the patients when to break the fast. All individuals should break the fast if the blood glucose levels drop to 3.9 or if they have got symptoms of hypoglycemia and hyperglycemia. Similarly, if the blood glucose levels are above 16.6, they should break the fast. When a patient breaks the fast due to hyperglycemia, you would treat the hyperglycemia by having a small amount of carbohydrate, fast-acting carbohydrate, like a carton of juice. And then once the glucose levels go up, they should have some kind of a long-acting carbohydrates. One of the things that I mentioned to the patient is there is a temptation in the patient that if they have symptoms of hyperglycemia or hyperglycemia about half an hour before the fast, they would want to carry on. The general advice is that they break the fast. When to exercise? Rigorous exercise is not recommended due to the risk of hyperglycemia, especially before breaking the fast. The patient should be encouraged to take light to moderate exercise, and Taraweeh or the obligatory evening prayers should be taken into the exercise equation. Fluid and meal planning. The important elements here are that the patient should be encouraged to eat the sahur or down meal to avoid the risk of hypoglycemia, especially when the duration of his fast. They should be encouraged to drink about 2 to 3 liters of water in the evenings. And there is the Ramadan nutritional plate app, which helps to plan the meals. Most of the meals should, 40 to 50% should be complex carbohydrates, 20 to 30% be protein, and less than 35% be fat. Fried foods like samosas should be avoided. Similarly, high sugar foods, especially that cause spikes in the blood glucose levels, again should be avoided. Making suitable medication adjustments. In general, if somebody is on metformin, who's taking once a daily, then no change in total daily dose is recommended. And the dose needs to be taken with the iftar or the evening meal. Twice a day, again, no dose adjustment is needed. Usual dose to be taken with sahur or start of the fast and with the iftar meals. If somebody is on thrice daily metformin, 500 TDS, then obviously the afternoon dose cannot be taken, and this should be given with iftar. Somebody who's on SGLT2 inhibitors does not require any change in medication, but suitable precautions should be adhered to, especially with regards to the consumption of fluids, which should be about 2 to 3 liters in the non-fasting hours. Again, the recommendation is that SGLT2 inhibitors should not be started during the month of Ramadan, and preferably should be started about a couple of months before. GLP-1 receptor agonists, again, do not require any change. Again, GLP-1 receptor agonists should be avoided to be started during Ramadan because of risk of vomitings. DPP-4 inhibitors require no dose adjustments at all, and just one once a day dose can be taken at iftar. TZDs, again, no changes required. If the patient is on concomitant sulfonylurea, the dose needs to be decreased. Sulfonylureas definitely does require adjustment. If it's just the patient is on once daily dose, say of 80 milligrams of glucuronide, that can be taken at iftar. But if somebody is on 160 milligrams of glucuronide in the morning and 80 in the evening, then the iftar dose is increased to 160 and the sahur dose is reduced to 80. And if somebody is on 160 milligrams twice daily, then the sahur dose is generally recommended to reduce the dose to just 80. So you have 80 in the morning and 160 in the evening. One of the important points regarding insulin therapy is if the patient is taking concomitant sulfonylurea with insulin, the general recommendation is to stop sulfonylurea as the risk of hypos is high. Similarly, if the patients were on insulin, you need to make the patient understand that the risk of hypoglycemia is very high. If the patient is just on basal insulin, then the dose of insulin needs to be reduced by 20%. If they're taking twice daily insulin, like Humalog mix 25, and if they are on 30 units in the morning and 20 in the evening, then the dose should be switched so that they take 30 with their iftar meal, while the sahur meal dose of 20 should be cut down to 10. Rapid-acting insulin should be taken with the iftar meal. The lunch dose should be skipped, and the morning dose should probably be cut by half. With the insulin, there are lots of adjustments that needs to be done, and in some cases, this may require specialist input. Step 2, agreement of management plan with your patients, which is review and agree, assess key patient characteristics, consider specific factors which impact choice of treatment, shared decision making, agree a management plan, implement along with ongoing monitoring and support. And finally, it's very important to do a post-Ramadan review, which could be done about a month after Ramadan. It's crucial to understand the challenges and documenting issue, forward planning for next year, situations and therefore risks may change, and encourage person to arrange appointment 6 to 8 weeks prior to Ramadan following year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For details of further resources available as part of the T2 Discussions Trending Topics series, please explore the other pages on this website.